I can spot your stylistic differences from Stephen King's very easily. Stephen King seems to be a very hasty writer. And I think one of the critics, when they were reviewing The Talisman, said you were more of a cerebral writer, which is absolutely true. But I had difficulty. I didn't read The Talisman very carefully because I was working on Wild Animals, in which I got at the same time. But I was looking for alternating chapters or something so I could better define your stylistic differences. I had trouble. I had trouble picking out who wrote what.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, since everybody should have difficulty picking out who wrote what. There are many passages that we actually physically wrote together, and nobody could tell that because it's impossible. There are many paragraphs that have sentences by him and sentences by me larded through them. On the other hand, the vast middle portion of the book was not written that way, and it was just written kind of trading fours in a fashion between Steve and me. But when we wrote these passages, at first we went to pains to try to smooth out the idiosyncrasies of our own styles and find some kind of common language. And then when that became unnecessary, we just wrote the way we always write, but many times put in false leads so that readers would assume that somebody wrote it when in fact the other guy wrote it. And I can't help but notice in these reviews when people go out on a limb and say, well, now I know that King wrote this and Straub wrote this, that most of the time, let us say at least 90% of the time, they're wrong.
Yeah. No, I'm sure they are. I couldn't tell, and I would feel foolish trying to state that if it's too difficult. But how did you trade off? Did you do them by alternating chapters, or how did it work?
We had a big outline, and we wrote according to the outline with many, many divergences, and then finally we scrapped the outline. But we assigned bits that didn't exactly approximate chapters, but sometimes we're like three or four chapters or three and a half or something. There are occasions where we traded off in the middle of chapters. But in the main, one guy did a big block of anywhere between 50 to 200 pages and then traded and then handed that off to the next guy. And the next guy advanced about an equal amount. So that's the way it was done.
Was it fun to do that? Sounds like an awful way to write.
It's not an awful way to write. And if I said it was fun, I'd be a terrible liar. But parts of it were fun, and the beginning was fun, and the ending was fun. For me, being with Stephen King is always fun because he's a delightful person, a very enjoyable guy, and one of my closest friends. So the continuous exposure to Steve King was one of the benefits of the book, I thought. But on the other hand, most novelists are used to being alone, to writing alone, to having absolute dominion over their little sphere. And when you have to share that with a vice king or whatever it is, then it's a little more difficult. And but at the same time,
I hear you say vice king.
Well, you know, not a vice king, but sort of a a joint king. That sounds even worse.
Oh, joint king, joy. I see.
So no matter what,
I don't
sort
know
of
if Stephen would like being referred to as a vice king.
I don't think he'd like being a joint king either very much.
Actually, but, technically, you were alone, though, because you worked in Connecticut and he worked in Maine, right?
Yeah, except for the beginning and the end. We worked apart and then sent information back and forth on our word processors. Some people think that's interesting. Some people think it's disgusting. But it is just mechanics. That's all it is. It was an efficient way to do a complicated project. And en route, I learned that a word processor is a great device for a writer, as most newsmen know, because you can chop and change so easily, and you can make a perfect manuscript with very little trouble.
Who had the final say in The Talisman?
We both had the final say. We did. We had a big editing session in Maine when it was all done with the Viking editor, a great editor, and a wonderful guy named Alan Williams, came up, and we went through it page by page, and I mean, virtually line by line, and we did everything to it that we could stand at that time. And later, Steve and I, then we had a fresh manuscript printed up that incorporated all those changes. And then each of us slunk back into our corners in our various houses and made all the changes that we secretly wanted to make. And those stood. So I had a free hand with Steve's material and he had a free hand with mine. And there were no gripes. That was part of the understanding. So we rewrote each other's stuff. And then there were questions of revision that had to be done. And I certainly revised many pages of Steve's in my own way. And it all went down very smoothly. And I occasionally now when I pick up the book, I see things in stuff I wrote that I didn't write. And I know that Steve, at the last minute, socked them in. And it's always an improvement, to tell you the truth. I don't think the book is perfect, but it's as good as we could get it, given the fact that we didn't want to become old men while writing it.
Would you do it again?
Long pause. I'm not sure. I would rewrite The Talisman if I could go back to the beginning. And Steve and I were sitting down as we did 4 or 5 years ago, and I would agree to do it again. But I don't think we would ever do another one.
There was kind of a publishing or distribution coup. It's not really not down your alley, but...
Oh, it is, though.
It isn't? Yeah. You know, is this actually right? The first printing, 500, more than half a million copies?
Right.
In the first printing?
The first printing was half a million, and it's reprinted at least 3 or 4 times.
It's already been reprinted?
Many times. So there are now almost 800,000 in print, and probably there are 800,000 hardbacks of The Talisman in print. And I should be shot for saying this, but I wouldn't be amazed if we sold a million hardbacks.
It's wonderful having a millionaire writer sitting to my right. It's wonderful because most writers just... I was talking to a writer from a young man from the University of Arizona who's written a little thin book of short stories published by a tiny little press in Tucson, and he came to New York and walked physically around to some bookstores trying to place them in there. I was as respectful with him as someone with an enormous success as you.
Oh, I think you must be, because writing is writing, no matter who does it, and no matter how many copies it sells, and its merit is determined by internal systems and not by the reading public. But I must say, it is very nice to have the reading public vote for you rather than against you. But it's important to remember, I think, that those Steve King in particular gets a lot of heat for the fact that he is extremely successful, and I also get more heat than is comfortable. It's important to remember that that kind of success came to us, that we did not prostitute ourselves to get it, and that when I first started writing this kind of book, you were making a lot of money if you made more than $20,000 a year. That was all right with me. You know, I didn't threaten to commit suicide out a window if somebody didn't give me hundreds of thousands of dollars. And all I did was write as well as I could, and I was lucky enough to have the public accept it. It isn't that I didn't make a deliberate assault on the bestseller list, I don't think. So it sounds like a weird, complicated apology for one's own success, but the book world sometimes does work by inverted values.
Well, there are books that that tend to be written by committee. I remember Peter Benchley's Jaws. Mm. It was a book that was seemed to be written by more than Peter himself. And mm-hmm. But let's go back to the Talisman and the shipping coup there, because maybe you could tell us about that. That's very unusual what they did.
Well, as I remember the story, they secreted copies in warehouses across America. This was a brilliant move. I think they secretly rented space so that they could store all these books, because this is a thick book, and 500,000 or 700,000 copies of it would demand a very large space. And then the purpose of this was so that they could actually put the books in the stores all on the same day. And I think that they came very, very close to doing it, as close as makes no difference. So which is the most effective way to do it from the point of view of selling books, and kind of a triumph of technique, you know, of which they can genuinely be proud, I think.
Apparently, the problem is that some books, some stores get the books before other stores, and thus they lose the business.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. In this case, maybe not, because this book has been selling extremely well now and came on the list at number one, and I think we'll remain at one for a while. So,
is it at one now?
Yeah.
The New York Times list?
Mm-hmm. The other interesting thing about this book, which isn't exactly common knowledge yet, but is relates to the kind of insider material in publishing, is that after a long, long discussion, we decided not to accept book club deals, and which caused a little fluttering in the dovecotes, since it's not, since it seems like going against wisdom. It's certainly going against received publishing wisdom to turn down book club offers, since book clubs give publishers immediate amounts of money. In our case, it was a gamble. We weren't satisfied with what we were offered by the book clubs, and we wanted to see how many more copies we could sell through retail outlets than we would lose by not going to the clubs. And the gamble, if that's what it was, turned out to be a very successful one, since we have easily, by now, made back all those lost sales.
You and King have the same agent.
We have the same agent, an excellent agent named Kirby McCauley.
It's interesting that what you've done here, because the young man I was telling you about a moment ago, who has written this thin little book of short stories, first book, mm-hmm. when he graduated from college, he wanted to be a writer. He's a very young man. But he said when he was in college, nobody told him about the business side of publishing, the nuts and bolts. What do you do when you're rejected? How do you market the book?
Nobody ever tells you that.
Yeah. No, and he is now teaching creative writing, and he's at the University of Arizona, and he's trying to tell his students something about the business aspects, because he doesn't think that writers should live in garrets.
Amen. No, heaven forbid. Nobody, though, ever does tell anybody these things, and you just have to find them out yourself, and I think that's the way it should be done. I am a little annoyed at times when people I don't know call me up and say, now, I have this book, what should I do about it? Because that, to me, stinks of too much chutzpah, you know. And what I always say is, well, if you don't have an agent, you must find one. Because that really is the first step for any new writer. It's hard to get in the door without an agent. I cannot advise people to seek specific agents, because that doesn't seem just to me, and it seems risky. Because those things have to be worked out very carefully between the writer and the specific agent. The point is, you need an agent. Everybody needs an agent at precisely that stage, when there are 30 publishers out there that haven't seen your book, and you want your book to have a shot at all of them, if it needs it. It's too hard on the spirit to do that yourself. And it's worthwhile to have somebody do it more or less on spec for you.
Of course, you can. I understand that you can go through all 30 publishing houses and then start over again.
And they won't remember that they ever saw before.
No.
Even if they once published it.
That was a wonderful story, wasn't it, about Doris Lessing, who wrote the two novels under a pseudonym, and her own publishing house turned them down.
That's right. Well, Bob Gottlieb, bless his soul, did recognize the style and said, now, don't try this on me. But I think it's even more interesting that Jerzy Kosinski, after winning the National Book Award, had that same book resubmitted.
That's
and
right.
Everybody turned it down.